Welcome to Technovation, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, president of Meta Strategy, advisor to technology executives, Forbes columnist, book author, and your host. Each episode of Technovation features insights from top executives and thought leaders at the intersection of business, technology, and innovation. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Thank you.
My guest this week is Tom Siebel. Tom is the Chief Executive Officer of C3.ai, a leading enterprise software provider for accelerating digital transformation, and the author of the book, Digital Transformation, Survive and Thrive in an Era of Mass Extinction. C3.ai enables large organizations to design, develop, provision, and operate industrial-scale artificial intelligence and Internet of Things applications. Tom founded the company after a long track record of success as an entrepreneur. His previous company, Siebel Systems, pioneered customer relationship management software before being acquired by Oracle Corporation in 2006 for $5.8 billion. In this interview, Tom discusses how AI is going to impact commercial, industrial, and government systems. He believes that the global information technology market will jump from its current $3.5 trillion market to $8.5 trillion in the next 5 years, mostly due to artificial intelligence. This will be achieved by lowering the cost of production and delivering products and services with greater safety, greater cybersecurity, and lower environmental impact. That said, Tom recognizes the consequences of AI. He warns companies that if they don't adapt to new technologies, they'll cease to be competitive. And he believes the U.S. will be in trouble if we do not win what he describes as a non-kinetic war over AI with China. We also discuss Tom's belief that large organizations have the advantage in the new generation of 21st century technology, how he remains motivated after a long successful career, his view on demand by CEOs and their boards to digitally transform companies, and a variety of other topics. Tom Siebel, welcome to Technovation. Great to speak with you today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Tom, I thought we would begin with your current company. People will know you as a multi-time entrepreneur and innovator. They'd also know you by your eponymous company, Siebel Systems, acquired by Oracle way back when. For those who may be less familiar with your current set of activities, which I know from many interviews you've given that you're equally excited about in C3, I wonder if you could take a moment and describe the business.
For the last 10 years, I've been involved in founding and building a company called C3.ai, of which I'm the chief executive. And we have spent a decade and about $500 million building a software suite that we market to typically to large multinational organizations that allows them to design, develop, provision, or operate enterprise and industrial scale artificial intelligence and IoT applications. So these would be customers like Baker Hughes, Royal Dutch Shell, CAT, 3M, the United States Air Force, on these kind of massive scale industrial AI implementations.
Very interesting. And as I hear you tick through that list of organizations, massive ones each, also older generation in terms of their founding. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about, and now I'm also bleeding into the topic of your latest book, Digital Transformation, about the methods that companies like the ones that you've mentioned, what they have done and what others like them need to do in order to more fully capture the opportunity that you're describing. Surely there's some transformation from a people practice, process, and technology perspective that organizations of a certain age and scale need to go through in order to ensure that they are ready for this sort of transformation. Can you describe that?
Well, as we power into the 21st century, there are a step function in information technology that consists of the convergence of four information technology vectors that kind of change everything about computing. And these include elastic cloud computing, big data, the Internet of Things, and finally, artificial intelligence. And, you know, at the convergence of these technologies, we find this phenomenon that we call big data. And, you know, there is a you know, there's a massive rush globally at the boardroom and at the level of the chief executive officer to digitally transform their companies in a way to leverage these technologies to change the way that they manufacture products, the way they develop services, the way they deliver products and services, the way that they run their companies, so that they can be competitive in the 21st century.
Very interesting. And you also talk about in your book and elsewhere about the warning large organizations that they not suffer the same fate as the Kodaks, Toys R Us's, Westinghouse's, Blockbuster, Circuit City's of the world, which is to say Fortune 500 companies, 52% of which have disappeared in the last 18 years. And data seems to suggest that if anything, the cycle time through the Fortune 500 is going to become more rather than less rapid. Can you talk a bit about in your study of those who've successfully transformed versus those that have not done so, some of the lessons from those?
Well, I would say it's successfully transforming. I don't think anybody is fully transformed who is not, other than those companies that you would call digital natives, like Tesla or Amazon or Airbnb, that are all about leveraging these technology vectors to change the way business is conducted in travel, in transportation, in financial services, or retailing, whatever it may be. Now, this technology trend, like previous trends that we have seen from mainframe computing to mini computing to personal computing to internetwork computing, or to enterprise application software, companies that did not adopt these technologies were left at significant competitive disadvantage. Now, this seems to be a little bit more significant than other technology, the other step functions in technology that we have seen, in that the risk is that this is an existential risk. And we're seeing an acceleration, as you mentioned, of, you know, in the area of this mass extinction event where these companies are just disappearing. You know, Westinghouse, Kodak, Toys R Us, Sears Roebuck, what have you. And in their place, we have these companies with what we call new DNA that we read about in Forbes all the time, or the Financial Times, or the Wall Street Journal. And they are adopting these technologies to dominate the industries in which they operate, be it retailing, hospitality, or automotive industry. So, you know, we see, you know, leading companies, and there's a sense that somehow these smaller startups from Silicon Valley or the Bronx or the Beltway in Washington D.C. somehow have an advantage in this new generation of kind of 21st century technology. And I don't think that's true. I think it's the big guys that really have the advantage: the J.P. Morgan Chases, the Boeings, conceivably the Walmarts, because they have the data and they have years and massive, massive amounts of data. And data is the fuel of AI. You know, that is the sine qua non. And, you know, so I think it's really the big guys that have the advantage in this new market to adopt technologies that are coming out of Silicon Valley and other places to use AI to strategic competitive advantage. And the leading companies like Bank of America, like 3M in Europe, like Enel, Royal Dutch Shell, Baker Hughes, I mean, they're dramatically, you know, accelerating their initiatives to digitally transform their companies from ground up. And I think they're going to be, you know, hyper competitive in the new markets. And I think companies that don't adopt these new technologies, they will cease to be competitive and they'll be acquired.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit about your own perspective on these big companies you've mentioned and others that you work with, about the balance between developing an ecosystem of partners, yourself and your company included, to help deliver and maintain and innovate relative to the four major technology trends that you mentioned a short while ago, on the one hand, versus building internal capabilities, internal staff and skill bases, in some of these cases that very difficult to find those and very expensive to do so. And depending upon when where one is situated, all the more arduous to build that bench strength relative to some of these. How do you think about that balance between internal capability development and the development of an ecosystem, recognizing, of course, that those are not mutually exclusive?
Well, there we have seen in the last 40 years, say, of the information technology business, that the decision was always build versus buy. So, as you might recall, I was one of the very early executives at Oracle Corporation, where we released relational database technology to market. And as we talked to customers around the world in the very early days of the relational database market, I mean, the decision wasn't really whether you're going to buy from Oracle or one of Oracle's competitors. The decision was, well, are we going to buy it from a professional software company, or are we going to build relational database systems ourselves? And IT organizations would very frequently attempt to build these relational database systems themselves. And to my knowledge, nobody succeeded at that. And so, you know, two or three years later, the CIO would be fired, and then Oracle or IBM or somebody else would sell them a relational database system. And when we introduced enterprise application software to market, ERP systems and CRM systems, the alternative, I mean, what companies were looking at really wasn't which vendor should I choose in the early days. It was, should I build it this myself or should I buy it from a professional software company? And in the case of CRM systems, I mean, almost everybody tried to build this themselves. IBM tried three times. Even technically competent companies like Microsoft, IBM, Hewlett-Packard, Compaq tried to build these systems themselves multiple times, ultimately failed, and then would buy it from Siebel Systems. So it's not unusual that as we now see this new generation of AI technologies, very frequently the CIO will elect to build the technology him or herself, like GE Digital, I think, spent almost a decade and $7 billion trying to build this by assembling various componentry from, you know, Apache open source Hadoop and Spark and what have you, all these various components. And just like relational database systems and just like ERP systems, the companies tend to fail at building this internally. And I would say when you get into AI, IoT applications, these are an order of magnitude more complex than either relational database or enterprise application software. And IT organizations simply do not have the skills to succeed at this. So some companies consider building it themselves, like GE did and failed. They invariably will fail, and they'll be purchasing these technologies from trusted partners that are professional application software developers.
Very interesting. I want to also hone in specifically on AI. Certainly a technology that is, or a trend, if you will, more broadly speaking, that is evolving, and many would say still very early stages in terms of its maturity. And obviously there are various stages leading all the way to artificial general intelligence, which many believe we're still quite some time from achieving. And I wonder if you could take a moment and reflect on where you see, you know, what inning of the game we're in from an AI perspective and how that's likely to develop, from at least from where you stand.
Well, if we look at the AI world, it's kind of like, it's like, you know, Julius Caesar, you know, considered Gaul as being divided into three parts. And I think AI is divided into three parts. We have artificial and general intelligence, as you mentioned, like AGI. These would be projects like Google DeepMind, where the attempt is to build computers that are as equivalently intelligent or have greater intelligence than a human being. And this gets to, you know, the malicious killer, malevolent killer robots, you know, in the refrigerator that takes over your household. And I don't think we need to worry about that anytime soon. Certainly not in our lifetimes. Okay, now the second class of AI is as it relates to social media systems, where they're using, the social media vendors are using AI very, very effectively to manipulate people at the level of the limbic brain. And I think this is malevolent. I think it is here we have people acting as servers to the computer rather than the opposite. And I think it's very concerning what we see going on in social media. The third category of AI, which is where we play at C3.ai, as it relates to the application of AI to commercial, industrial, and government systems. So this is building prediction engines, for example, to identify fraud, to bring efficiency to the supply chain, what we call stochastic optimization of the supply chain, predictive maintenance for devices in the digital oil fields or the smart grid or the manufacturing industry, automotive, agricultural equipment, precision health, what have you. So this is about using AI to lower the cost of production, okay, to deliver products and services with greater safety, with greater cybersecurity, okay, and with lower environmental impact. And so as it relates to this area, I think this is we look at the global information technology market in 2019. I think it's about $3.5 trillion. I think it'll be $8.5 trillion in 5 years, and most of that growth is all about AI. So I think that the cell has divided maybe four times, and what we see develop in the next 20 years is going to be, you know, unimaginable, fantastic, and of really significant social and economic impact.
You've not been shy. You've actually referred to there being a war with China based on artificial intelligence. You've also referenced how Vladimir Putin has talked about how AI, the country that wins at AI will ultimately win in the world. And I wonder how you think about, especially as someone, I'm not asking you to reveal the details of your partnerships with government entities like the DOD and the Air Force, who you mentioned earlier. But I'm curious how you, as a citizen, how you think about these things and your levels of optimism or pessimism as to the U.S.'s ability to lead and the extent to which its appropriate language win in the war on related to AI.
Well, I think this is a very important topic. And as you mentioned, in 2017, Vladimir Putin said, whoever wins the war on AI dominates the world. And I think that's true. And I think it's not going to be Russia. It's either going to be China or the U.S. I think we are at a state of war, non-kinetic warfare with China today. We read in the Wall Street Journal with Rebecca Smith, or there's a book called Shadow War out there, where it's very well documented. The Chinese and the Russians are, infiltrating our power grid infrastructure every day, infiltrating our financial system infrastructure every day, in implanting viruses, okay, and bots and malware, so they can remotely just turn the grid off. And so this is a well-documented fact. We have the Chinese in, well-documented incidents where they have, penetrated, say, the Office of Personnel Management in the United States government and stolen the personnel records of, I believe, up to 21 million people, including everybody who has ever applied for or been granted a security clearance. Well, if this is not war, what is it? So then we have the Chinese, and read the 13th five-year plan. It's available on Wikipedia, and it's very clear what they're doing. Okay, and they're investing, tens of billion dollars a year trying to advance AI to win this battle, to dominate, use of AI, okay, for the purposes of defense and conducting warfare. Now, in many ways, this is a test of two, fundamentally diametrically opposed political philosophies. In the case of China, we have a totalitarian state. We have a top-down command and control economy where the NRDC, writes the 13th five-year plan, invests billions of dollars, and they just mandate that this happens. Okay, and they are very bright, they're very competent, they're very well educated, and they are hard at work. In the United States, we have a much, much more messy process of a, you know, free market economy, a capitalist system, where innovation takes place not from a top-down command and control government-mandated system, but it happens in garages in Palo Alto and storefronts in the Bronx. Now, I don't know which system is going to win, okay, but this is going to be, I think, the ultimate test of these political philosophies, and this is not a war that we want to lose. So it's, I think the stakes, you know, could not be higher. This is very important, and it is game on.
That's very interesting. And I'm curious what role you see the government playing in all of this versus private industry. You know, how do you see the balance between the two of those?
Well, I mean, if we look at the people who are in the Pentagon in the United States, they are very bright. They're very well educated. These are kind of scholar statesmen warriors. They are not asleep at the switch, and they are adopting AI in many, many ways to, you know, improve the efficiency of the Department of Defense. That being said, I think it's likely the way that the United States is going to advance as it relates to AI is very much through a free market economy, through entrepreneurism, through the creativity of individuals who are, you know, unbridled by the constraints of the state. And we'll see how it ends. But I hope the system, you know, it's always worked out well for us in the past, and hopefully it'll continue to work going forward, because if it doesn't, we're going to have a problem.
Mm. I wanted to also ask you, Tom, as somebody who's been such a successful entrepreneur multiple times over, what keeps you hungry? You elected, you sort of cemented your legacy through Siebel Systems, among other things that you have done, and yet got back into it and very successfully with C3.ai. And curious now at this stage of your career, what keeps you so driven to continue in the startup game, and the entrepreneurial game, when others would perhaps have put their feet up, perhaps to relax in their career? What keeps you so driven?
Well, I've been very fortunate in my career to be in the right place at the right time on multiple occasions. The first was when I entered the relational database industry at the when it was in the nation state. Okay, and then later we founded a company called Siebel Systems, where we invented what is known as, you know, CRM products and the CRM market as you think it today about it today. And that today is $100 billion industry annually. So that turned out to be those events turned out to be pretty fortuitous. Now we're looking at, you know, this change is an order of magnitude more significant than what happened in the relational database market or the enterprise application software market. This is a quarter of a $1 trillion software market in 2023. It changes, AI changes everything about the way we think about computing, about the way we think about managing businesses, about the way that we think about motivating people, and about the way we think about serving customers. So this is really exciting. And you ask, you know, why do I do this? This is my idea of a good time. You know, I like to be involved in the formation of markets. I like to do my best to attract, you know, highly motivated, well-educated, high-energy professionals, and create markets. So I believe that we're, you know, I've had the opportunity to play a role in the creation of the relational database market, of the enterprise application software market, and now we're playing a role, and I think a leadership role, in the development of applying AI to commercial, industrial, and government processes globally. And it's really hard. It's really challenging. These are, every project we're working on has a problem that has never been solved before. And the social and economic benefit of what we do is staggering. So why do I do this? I do it because this is my idea of a good time. This is my idea of fun.
Excellent. Well, what a blessing it is when your work is your idea of fun, and the amount of time, no doubt, that it requires to be as successful as this endeavor takes is something you're enjoying at the same time. Well, Tom Siebel, thank you so much for joining us on Technovation today. It's been wonderful to get to know you, to hear a bit more about your story, your perspectives on the development of these four key technologies and the role the C3.ai will play in it. So thank you for your time today.
The pleasure was entirely mine, Peter. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. Please join me next week when my guest will be Karen Ann Terrell, the Chief Digital and Technology Officer of GSK.